So plans to give the Northern Ireland Assembly a say in a future Brexit backstop have been rubbished by both the DUP and Sinn Féin. Yesterday, the government committed to giving local politicians a say on any new EU rules being applied to Northern Ireland in the event that the backstop comes into force. But the DUP and Sinn Féin immediately shot the proposals down. The DUP say they added nothing new, and Sinn Féin said there must be no veto afforded to any party by anybody. Our political editor, Mark Devonport, is on the line. Good morning to you, Mark.
Good morning.
Talk us through the proposals from yesterday, first of all, and then why it didn't seem to gather much support, if any, here.
Well, this was a white paper from the UK government setting out proposals for how the Northern Ireland Assembly should have an influence in this whole matter of the potential sort of EU trade rules that might come in force come into force in Northern Ireland after Brexit or remain in force after Brexit. And there were a number of things there that certainly I think unionists would have liked. For instance, it included a promise that there will be unfettered access for Northern Ireland firms to the Great British market. Now, unionists will say, look, that promise had been made previously in what was known as the joint report of December 2017, but hadn't featured in the withdrawal agreement that Theresa May then signed up to with the rest of the EU members. And so at least they'll be happy that that is in there, even if they would like it also to operate the other way around. There was also an element which was probably not so controversial, whereby the Northern Ireland Assembly would have some kind of role in a committee overseeing the backstop if it came in and would be consulted about whether the backstop should ever come in. The whole question, though, of the veto was contained in one paragraph which talked about the UK government having to seek the agreement of the Northern Ireland Assembly if there were any kind of new rules, modifications to EU trade rules whilst the backstop was in force. And that has caused problems because on the one hand, the DUP don't see it as being enough of a veto because it merely talked about the UK government seeking the agreement of the Assembly, not actually having to get it. And on the other hand, the Irish government and Sinn Féin see it as being too much of a veto because they are concerned about a situation in which the Northern Ireland Assembly, operating as it does with the system of petitions of concern, could, on the basis of the DUP's opposition, maybe joined with a few other unionists, frustrate trade rules that the EU wants to apply right across the European Union.
Yes, the Leo Varadkar saying, I don't think we can have a situation whereby the Northern Ireland Executive or Assembly has a veto power, because that would essentially, as you're alluding to, Mark, give one of the two communities veto power over the other. What about those specific responses from the likes of Sinn Féin and the DUP? Are you surprised with how they reacted?
Not particularly. The DUP has now for some months been saying, look, we must have the assurances that we were given back in December 2017. You remember that was the time when Theresa May signed up to a deal or was on the point of signing up to a deal, and then they stopped her and said, hang on, how you're dealing with Northern Ireland isn't the way we think it should be dealt with. And then they got this extra assurance known as Article 50 written in. They then felt that the government didn't actually get that in the main EU withdrawal agreement. So they have been pressing for a stronger power for the Northern Ireland Assembly as possible, essentially to stop any divergence in trade rules between Great Britain and Northern Ireland in the future, because they think that's the thin end of the wedge that might weaken the union. So it wasn't surprising where they were coming from. Sinn Féin and the other parties have also, when they've gone off to see Michel Barnier in the past, said, we don't want something to be put in place which would effectively hand the DUP a veto over the situation in Northern Ireland in the future. You can see practically, for instance, how it would cause difficulty. Say we take that recent EU move whereby they said that goods should be more long-lasting, that manufacturers should be required to ensure that they will last a bit longer, that they can be repaired. Say they introduced that across the whole of the EU and then they said, oh, hang on, the Northern Ireland Assembly has vetoed this. You can imagine the kind of chaos that would cause. On the other hand, when you've got Leo Varadkar saying, oh, we can't have a situation where one community wields a veto over the other, you think, is he not aware of the Good Friday Agreement? That's how it operates. That's how we're in this situation that we are right now, yeah, in relation to the law on abortion, the law on same-sex marriage or whatever. If it operated in a different way, then it wouldn't be the Good Friday Agreement that he often talks so much about having to stand by the letter and the spirit of.
As always, Mark, you're one step ahead of me. In a debate about the withdrawal agreement in the Commons last night, the DUP MP Gavin Robinson made this point.
One of the things that is in the Belfast Agreement, which is completely absent from this discussion, at strand 2, paragraph 12, is that any future relationship or impediment or regulation or rule has only to be implemented when it is agreed by the Northern Ireland Assembly and the Oireachtas in the South. Completely absent from the considerations or indeed the text of the withdrawal agreement.
We've already moved on to this point to an extent, Mark, but the DUP then saying that the withdrawal agreement contravenes the Belfast Agreement, the Good Friday Agreement.
Well, obviously it's no surprise that the DUP should be trying to get a stronger veto power to Stormont, where it doesn't actually have the numbers at the moment to trigger a petition of concern, but with the help of the TUV and a few Ulster unionists, it can do that. There is a certain irony, of course, in a DUP MP telling the Commons about the exact provisions of the Good Friday Agreement, because anyone who was there at the time would remember that the DUP had walked out and were protesting against it as a big sellout. So that shows how far we've come in relation to that. But at the moment, I think maybe what people are missing in this argument about the veto is, let's go back to the wording of what the government said, even at the time when the UK government needs the DUP more than ever. It only offered to seek the agreement of the Assembly, which is a pretty weasel word in terms of politics. It doesn't mean that they must get it. So even at that stage, it seemed to my mind to fall far short of a veto. But we're going to have to watch some other amendments that are coming up, which also seem to tie the government's hands in different ways and, you know, could impinge more on that agreement. But Simon Coveney continuing to defend the agreement. But now we have some controversy about him possibly not meeting the DUP as well to discuss these points.
OK, Mark Devenport, always a pleasure. Thank you. The question for you this morning is, should we have a veto over the parts of the Brexit withdrawal agreement which directly affect Northern Ireland? Is that something that you feel we should, in Northern Ireland, have the power to do? 03030 80 55 55. With me now, the former UKIP leader in Northern Ireland, David McNary. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Vinny.
And the commentator, Patricia McBride. Good morning to you, Patricia.
Good morning, Vinny.
Your thoughts, first of all, Patricia, is this something that we should have?
Well, giving a Stormont a say in this withdrawal agreement is really Theresa May trying to come up with ways to get the DUP to support the draft withdrawal agreement. And I suppose the way that I look at it is, there are a number of flaws in that suggestion. And the first and the most blindingly obvious flaw in the whole thing is that we don't have an assembly. So, you know, she's talking about giving powers to an institution that is not currently sitting, in which there are no negotiations around trying to get that assembly back up and running, and which her own Secretary of State isn't doing anything to try and facilitate in terms of getting the parties together and getting those discussions restarted after the failure of the talks last February. So that's the first issue. And the second is that this is an agreement, the withdrawal agreement. Brexit is a matter between the UK government and the European Union, the EU27. And what is happening here is that the British government, over a period of time, has attempted to try and shave off elements of the withdrawal agreement into a series of bilateral agreements between the British and Irish governments. And the EU27 is simply not going to allow that to happen, because this is not, it's not in their interest to do it. It's in their interest to act as a bloc. And fundamentally, you know, if you look at it, you know, strand 2, paragraph 12 that Gavin Robinson refers to relates to the North-South Ministerial Council. It's about relationships between the North and the South. It is not about relationships between the UK and the EU27. So from that point of view, I mean, whilst I understand in one point his logic, he's using the wrong law.
What about the issue that we're ignoring a little bit, Patricia, in relation to how we voted here? So in Northern Ireland, people, the majority voted to remain. Mm. And therefore, this the question again is how this directly affects Northern Ireland, the different elements within that withdrawal agreement that will affect us living here. Is this a time for us to be selfish?
Well, I think it's a time for us to be pragmatic, and it's a time for us to try and make the best deal possible. I think there's been a broad acceptance, a reluctant acceptance to voted remain, that Brexit is going to go ahead, barring, you know, a sea change in attitude at Westminster. And that's why you have seen business organisations, farming or associations and a number of the political parties coming out and saying, you know, the withdrawal agreement, the draft.
We're having a few problems with your line there, Patricia. We'll try and get that sorted here. David McNair, your thoughts on, in particular, what Patricia was saying there?
Well, let's face it. Dublin's treatment of Northern Ireland has been nothing but treacherous. It's been unforgivable of the Irish government now, with this backstop, to put at risk all the gains that you and I and everybody else enjoys from the Belfast Agreement. Finny, I cannot recall ever the backstop and the notion of the backstop being raised during the referendum. It probably wasn't because, and I didn't hear it, when no one thought that the result would actually be for Brexit, that the people of the United Kingdom would vote to leave. So they've invented this backstop. And to place it now, as they're trying to do, the Prime Minister, in waiting, as the EU are trying to tell us, is, well, we mightn't use this, it might never, ever be used. To place it until it might be used or until it will be used by the EU are now under the conversation we're having until there's an assembly. This is typical scattergun tactics of a Prime Minister on her way out. And she signed up to this foolishly over a year ago, and she walked into it just to get over the line so that she could have Christmas at Chequers last year. What I'm saying, Vinny, is on the issue of the agreement, you cannot write joint authority on the postage stamp or more of a backstop. You cannot write that into the agreement when the backstop has a detrimental impact on the United Kingdom as a whole. So you cannot shunt it from the rest of the United Kingdom, GB, onto little old Northern Ireland.
And of course, Patricia, when you talk about consideration, and David referred to consideration there, that there was no consideration during the referendum for the backstop because it hadn't even been considered at that point.
Well, I think there was no consideration during the campaign as to what Brexit actually meant. No one, I don't think anyone, realised the full extent and the full ramifications of it.
Oh, yes, we did. Patricia.
Well, seriously, so you knew that you're going to lose your European health insurance card. You knew that citizens' rights would be restricted, that you knew that free movement would be restricted, not only for, well, you know, not only for people north and south, but for east and west.
What most people knew, Patricia, was that we were going to have to argue for those in negotiation. There's no argument on behalf, no negotiation on behalf of either Dublin or the EU on the backstop. The backstop is an invention, and, you know, it's probably an argument for another day, but it's an invention. It's an invention to prop up a border poll that the Irish have dreamt up, and that's where it is very, very detrimental to unionists.
The backstop is there to protect the interests of citizens in the north, to ensure that there's free movement, to ensure
that citizens of the north, we're citizens.
Okay, let Patricia finish, David, and we'll bring you back in. Just let Patricia finish her point and we'll bring you back in.
The backstop is around ensuring that the Good Friday Agreement is protected, that the rights of Irish citizens who will remain Irish citizens and will remain EU citizens under the Good Friday Agreement, that their rights to free movement are protected, that their rights to express your identity is protected, that there can continue to be free movement north and south for businesses, for people who are working, so that we have recognition, mutual recognition of qualifications when Britain exits the EU. So all of those things are around protecting citizens' rights, and that's why it's vitally important. So nobody envisaged that the backstop would be needed because everybody expected or hoped that if the British government was negotiating a withdrawal agreement, in the 2 years since the Brexit referendum, they would have negotiated the agreement, and they've done, frankly, damn all. The Irish government is about 10 steps ahead in terms of preparing people.
Okay.
You can go on to an Irish government. I mean, what do the advice from civil servants in Stormont? Call the Department of Foreign Affairs. They'll tell you what to do. That's what they're telling
you. Okay, David, you back in there. We'll go to the phones. David, go ahead.
Listen, we can argue what Patricia says about, you know, Irish citizens, EU citizens, etc. As far as I'm concerned, if you live in Northern Ireland, your rights are going to be protected. There's nobody threatening any of those things in terms of Brexit or were they ever during the referendum? There was nobody going to, and still is no one going to put in a hard border. But where we are now, and picking up from what your political correspondent Mark Devenport was saying, the government now have accepted an amendment from Hugo Swire MP to put a time scale of 1 year only on this backstop. Listen up, people. That means that Hugo Swire MP and the government are prepared for 12 months to annex Northern Ireland from the United Kingdom under Dublin EU rule and their control of the border. That's where this backstop is taking us. And we need to throw it out.
030-30-80-55-55. Do you want to have a say? It is your Northern Ireland. And when I say you, your politicians on your behalf. 030-30-80-55-55. Joe, good morning to you. First call of the day. Go ahead.
Good morning. I just want to make a short comment regarding the backstop. And people here really don't realise what is entailed in the backstop. It's very simple. If the draft agreement that Theresa has agreed with Europe comes into being, Northern Ireland will be ruled from Brussels. And Northern Ireland will have no politicians in Brussels to give our case, for arguing to her how things are. We will have no say. Brussels will rule us. And we and the people in Northern Ireland will have no politicians there to represent.
Well, Patricia, that's the interpretation by some people.
Well, the interpretation that I would give is that the backstop is something that comes into effect. If the withdrawal agreement, if or when the withdrawal agreement is brought into force on the 29th of March, there's still a two-year period to negotiate the deal. If the deal's not negotiated in that two-year period, that is when the backstop comes into effect.
Patricia, you are talking. What you're talking is not what I'm all about. I'm all about the reality if the backstop does take place. And that's what people are trying to avoid realising.
And the way to avoid the backstop coming into
place. Let Patricia put a point to her, Joe.
Let her respond.
No, Patricia, I don't agree with you because you're keeping saying, Joe,
if you let me chair this, please. So you put a point to Patricia, we'll bring you back on, Joe. Patricia.
Well, then the way to stop the backstop coming into force is for the politicians at Westminster to negotiate in good faith with the EU27 to come up with a set of solutions to stop the backstop being necessary.
Yes.
So the British government...
But you know that that's not what Joe was asking you.
Well, what was he asking?
He was asking you if it does come into place. Not about... will Northern Ireland be subject to the rules of Brussels as opposed to Westminster? So not stopping it from coming in, but if it does.
What will happen is that the North would remain in the customs union. So there would be differing trade tariffs. There would be differing rules around regulatory compliance and issues like that. And that's around ensuring that there is no hard border in the island of Ireland.
Under Dublin rule?
Under Dublin rule? No, it's called the EU.
We're getting slightly sidestepped here, but Patricia, going back to the fact that Brussels and the bully boys in Dublin
MEPs
over this border.
Patricia, would we have MEPs in Brussels representing
us? Wouldn't.
Just Patricia, that's the point that Joe is trying to make.
We will not have MEPs following the withdrawal from the EU. There will be the three MEPs that represent this part of Ireland will no longer have seats. Now, there is a difficulty.
So if we're governed from elsewhere...
Would you please be courteous, Patricia? The three MEPs represented Northern Ireland. They didn't represent Ireland. There's no such a place
David,
as Ireland.
It's a different discussion for another day. If you can let Patricia finish...
But
and we
does
will...
make you angry when she insults
Let's just try and remain calm.
David, calm down. It's not good for
Calm down, nothing. I'm fed up being insulted by people who are disgraceful in their treatment of unionists.
Okay.
We'll no longer have the three MEPs who currently represent us. And one of the challenges that I would put to the Irish government is, given that there were a number of seats redistributed by the EU to other member states following the notice of withdrawal by Britain, the Irish government received two additional seats in the European Parliament. Now, they have a duty and a responsibility to ensure that the people of the North, whose interests they say that they are trying to protect, are represented through those two additional seats. And the Irish government, frankly, is letting people down if it doesn't do something around ensuring that Irish citizens who continue to be EU citizens are represented at European parliamentary level post the withdrawal.
So what about Patricia, then, those people that consider themselves to be British and live in Northern Ireland? So are you including them in that?
I think everybody who lives in this part of Ireland who's going to be negatively impacted by Brexit, because we are, there's, you know, I cannot see how anybody doesn't realise that we will be negatively impacted by that. Everybody needs representation at an EU level until the withdrawal agreement is completed, until that two-year negotiation period is over, and right throughout the period of any backstop that may come into place if there is no agreement. And unfortunately, given the British government's track record of negotiation and preparation, it is a real possibility that the backstop will come into effect. But that's purely out of their own making. It's not because it's being forced on them by the EU or being forced on them by the Irish government. It's because they can't get their act together.
OK, Peter and Donaghy. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead.
I was just wondering about, well, why is the backstop such a problem? And why I think that the DUP and Sinn Féin have got a wee argument going on with themselves is because of the, what is it, something of concern?
Petition of concern.
Petition of concern, yes. You know, like, and basically, a lot of people in the North voted to remain. And yet the DUP, our largest party in Parliament, are there supporting the Irish people, yet they're not taking up the mantle of our concerns.
But the vote, the referendum, wasn't a Northern Ireland vote, it was a UK
vote.
It was
a whole, it was, yeah. Yes, it was a whole UK.
And as a whole. But,
yes, but they are taking the English government. And remember, Manchester and Birmingham would probably have more people in their cities to outvote the whole of Northern Ireland.
Okay, Peter, thank you. Brian in West Belfast. Good morning, Brian.
Morning, Vente. Can you hear me?
Did you just call me Vente? go ahead, Brian.
Sorry, do you hear me okay?
I can indeed. Go ahead.
No, I just a quick comment. David McNary, I just checked to say he was going to insult him there when he called the Republic government bully boys. That's just a quick point. He's mentioned that before a few times. But go back to the top of the programme about the veto. How can we even discuss this when we haven't got a government? I mean, there's Sinn Féin and the DUP won't get together unless they start talking about the Irish language and the same-sex marriage and so forth. So on the point of the veto, to me, it's totally irrelevant. It shouldn't even be discussed.
Yeah, you're right, Brian.
But you do obviously, if the withdrawal agreement is passed and there's that two-year period, you know, the Assembly could be up and running inside that two-year period. So should we not discuss it now? Should it not be something that is considered, Brian?
No, I totally disagree, because there's no signs that I can see that they're going to get together. No sign at all. Someone can tell me that if they were even talking behind closed doors and it was leaked out, then I would have hope.
Well, let me ask you a different way, Brian. Do you want them to get back into Stormont?
Yes.
And
yes.
Would you want them to have control, to have a veto?
I don't believe in the vetoes for anything. If it's discussed, we shouldn't have. It's like the petition that's been concerned here. We don't want that. To me, that's something similar, isn't it? That they can talk about things, discuss things, pass things, and then a party can turn around and say, no, we're not doing that. Totally.
Yeah, there's one thing. Yeah, Peter's right. And the other thing that we're forgetting in this discussion is that there's no other element of Brexit that is devolved, in the sense that the Scottish Parliament or the Welsh Assembly don't independently have any say in these negotiations. And you can be sure that if any additional powers were given to an Assembly that may, at some stage in the future, come back into being, that the Scottish Parliament and the Welsh Assembly would be up in arms.
But is it exactly the same comparison, Patricia, in terms of that Brexit withdrawal agreement?
We may say that it isn't, but I would suggest to you that
The Scottish and the Welsh.
Nicola Sturgeon would make very, very strong cases.
Okay.
Of course, Nicola Sturgeon would, but the Scottish and the Welsh don't have an aggressive Irish government sitting on its border trying to break up the union, trying to interfere in the United Kingdom.
David, you're delusional. If you really think that, the whole purpose...
Would you mind letting me finish?
Yeah, I would, because I'm going to interrupt you when you're talking nonsense.
Right.
The
All
Irish
right.
government is not being aggressive. The Irish
so only you have a monopoly of talking sense, then.
Okay.
Is that what we're in for?
Okay, David, finish your point.
Well, today I think that is what we're in for.
That those of us who actually believe that the peace process was going to deliver peace and deliver an accommodation, as Brian was talking about, through a Northern Ireland Assembly, that seems that we our hopes to end controversial agitation are going up in smoke now, because we can't have an assembly and we can't, and Brian's right, there's no sign of them getting together. But that doesn't mean that nationalists in the north, and particularly in the south as well, that they have to keep agitating for a fight when unionist hands are tied behind their back. And we have no platforms except the Mother Parliament. And what's said in the Mother Parliament by unionists, you must respect. That's where you're letting yourself down, Patricia. You don't respect any unionist.
Okay,
any
well, Patricia, you'll want to respond to that.
I absolutely do. What I don't respect
you're shameful.
Is being spoken down to. And what I don't respect is being insulted and being spoken down to. I don't accept that standing up for the rights of Irish citizens and EU citizens constitutes aggression by the Irish government. That is their duty as a sovereign government. So for anyone to say that it is aggression to stand up for those rights is severely misguided. I think we have a situation here where all of our business leaders, the vast majority of our business leaders, our farming community, our healthcare sector are saying we have a serious problem here. Brexit is going to negatively impact the North in a way that it won't impact on other areas, and we have to put in place protections to make sure that that doesn't happen. That's where our focus needs to be, on the withdrawal agreement, on any future backstop. If you don't want the backstop, then negotiate a better deal. That's the message that should be going clearly from the community to the politicians.
Well, unless the Irish stop their agitation and stop interfering on constitutional matters detrimental to Northern Ireland, this backstop could well backfire.
Okay.
Because people are no longer going to tolerate for any length of time the Irish having a say in their affairs. And we could see a revolt across the United Kingdom against Irish goods, against coming to Ireland, Connemara, for a great visit, against spending euros in Ireland, when this Irish country, as you call it, has actually done nothing but be totally unfriendly to the United Kingdom.
Okay, we'll have to agree to disagree at this point. Patricia McBride and David McNary, thank you very much.